Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back to Debunking Everything. I'm Chris Matthew. With me, as always, Corey Hughes. Tonight we have a very special show to you tonight. It is, of course, the anniversary of 9/11, one of the largest psychological warfare operations in my mind that of modern history, along with, of course, the JFK assassination and the shit show we're looking at right now with the COVID. But tonight, Corey, of course, has put together an amazing presentation with some slides to go over some of the things that you probably may not know, because some of the research that he's done on the JFK assassination are mind-blowing, and is things that have brought so much to light that people that are still alive today could be held accountable for some of the things that happened. But let's get into what's going on tonight with 9/11. Where should we start with this?
Well, 9/11 is not my area of expertise. Of course, I've done some digging into it, but much of the work on solving 9/11 really came from Ryan Dawson and a handful of other people. But Ryan's work really kind of all came together in a film called The Empire Unmasked. And if you haven't seen it, it is the definitive film on 9/11. And it doesn't waste time going into things like thermite and no plane hit the Pentagon and things like that. It's focused on... It's amazing research that's really focused on the facts, things that are provable, which is the path that I like to take when it comes to history. So 9/11 was a very complicated event, and not just in and of the events themselves, but the history that led to it, because it really goes back 100 years at least, and it starts with the birth of Zionism in 1895, because, of course, Israel and the cabal were behind 9/11. Let me go ahead and share screen. Hey, can you enable share screen for me?
You should have it now. It's good. Can you hear me?
Yes. All right. Can you see my screen?
Yes.
Okay, great. All right. So we're going to start off with a historic timeline. I'm not going to go too much into these. I just wanted to lay out some of the key events in history that led to 9/11. And that have a direct connection in as far as motives and personnel and pretty much everything. So 1895, the birth of political Zionism, that kind of culminated in 1897 with the first World Zionist Congress. All the way back then, the Zionists had planned to have a world government in place. And so when you see things called like the World Zionist Congress, they really meant it. That was the Congress of the future government of the world. So 1914, it's hard to ignore World War I. Not really that versed on World War I, but nonetheless, you can rest assured that they had a hand in instigating it. So we'll fast forward 1933. That was a very crucial year. That was the year that Rabbi Wise in New York City launched the Zionist boycott of Germany and all German goods. And of course, that was just part of a manipulation scheme to get Hitler to agree to the Havara Agreement, which was the agreement that allowed Jews to leave from Germany and relocate to Palestine with their assets intact. That is just one of many events leading to 9/11 that hold great importance and relevance as you come to understand how these things intertwine. Post-World War II deal with U.S. intelligence and the Galen Organization. I've talked about this briefly in the past. The Galen Organization was Reinhard Galen's spy network. It was the remnants of the Nazis post-World War II. We'll get into that in much more detail another time. Then you move into later in 1945, you have the Sanborn Institute, which was David Ben-Gurion's large-scale arms smuggling operation in order to fuel the war in Palestine. The following year, I think one of the most crucial events in the history of Zionism and the U.S. Mafia is their partnership starting in 1946. That plays a role to this day because that partnership is still largely responsible for distributing a vast portion of the drugs that still flow into this country. So that is a partnership that has remained intact. 1957, NUMEC, the smuggling of nuclear material out of Apollo, Pennsylvania, to be used as a Dimona nuclear reactor. That's a key event in our history. Most history books overlook it, though. 1962, the U.S. demands FARA registration of the American Zionist Council. So from 1948 through 1962, Israel had created and dismantled a number of organizations that were strictly used to lobby politicians, and FARA registration would have ended their ability to buy elections, fundamentally. So the U.S. was demanding it in 62. They demanded it again in 63. And then John F. Kennedy gets assassinated, and they are never questioned about their FARA registration ever again. Israel was behind the assassination of Kennedy and the installation of LBJ as president, who was our first Jewish Zionist president. Most people don't like to discuss that, or historians don't, but that is very much a reality. Then 1967, June 5th, you have the Six-Day War. Israel attempted to bring the United States into a war with Egypt, and we'll get to why momentarily. But in order to do that, they attacked a U.S. ship called the U.S. Liberty. It was an obvious ploy. Johnson was in on it. I've discussed that in the past. And when it failed to bring America into the war, 1 year later on that date, June 5th, Robert Kennedy was assassinated at the Ambassador Hotel.
Amazing how far back they planned some of these events.
Yes, and like you can see the key dates, June 5th, they were big on anniversaries. The Oklahoma City bombing was on an anniversary, and we'll talk about that here shortly. But that is, for some reason, a key component in their planning. Okay, 1979, July 3rd, Carter authorizes recruitment of Afghan fighters. This is crucial because this is the birth of Al-Qaeda. When Carter authorized the recruitment of Afghan fighters, he was doing it so as to pull the Russians into kind of their own Vietnam, get them tied up in a war they could not win. And Carter knew they couldn't win. Everyone knew they couldn't win because it was an untraditional type of warfare that they were experiencing. So 1979, we're also ousted from Iran. And this also coincides with the birth of Islamic terrorism. So there was no such thing. There were no Islamic terrorists, or at least branded and packaged to the public that way prior to 79. And once we lost our foothold in Iran, when the Shah fell, we were thrown out. The Shah was a brutal dictator. He was our puppet. That is when all of a sudden Islamic terrorism came into being. And from 1979 on, you will see a slew of terrorist attacks that are then blamed on Islamic terrorist groups, which all those groups are created and funded by the United States. Anyway, so now, one of the larger long-term plans of the Israelis is the enactment of Greater Israel, the Greater Israel Project, and we'll get into this in much more detail later on, is a project to expand throughout the Middle East and basically absorb large portions of the surrounding countries. So then we have 1990, the Gulf War begins, 575,000 Iraqi children dead due to sanctions. 1991, on February 26, Iraq retreats from Kuwait, and the war technically ends, although we had troops there for years, we blew shit up for years. They can say the war ended then, but really it dragged on indefinitely. So then 1993, on February 26, the World Trade Center bombing, and as I will show, when it comes to the World Trade Center bombing, when it comes to Oklahoma City, there was a really large propaganda campaign to pin it on Saddam Hussein to bring us back into the war, because they felt that George Bush did not complete what he set out to do when he sent troops into Iraq the first time. And therefore, they committed terrorist attacks here in the United States, tried to pin it on Saddam Hussein in order to keep us and further us into our involvement in war with Iraq. So we'll get much more into that later on. All right. So April 19th, Oklahoma City bombing, as I will show. And I think we did a whole episode on this, so I'm not going to go too much into it. But it was Israel. They used a guy named Andras Strassmeyer, a Mossad agent. He was a German national. Father was connected to the Galen organization. He was John Doe number two, and he's the one who blew up the Murrah building along with Timothy McVeigh, even though they did find two additional bombs inside the building that McVeigh obviously could not have planted. We'll cover that in much more detail later. Then we'll talk about PNAC and rebuilding America's defenses. A lot of people put a lot of emphasis on this, but this, you know, if you've studied history, this is nothing new. You know, kind of telescoping what you're going to do has been kind of a pattern. And then we have the events of September 11th, 2001. So all of these are crucial events that led up to 2001, the events of 2001. However, there are really 100 of these, that, and I couldn't include them all. There are so many more that are equally as important. But for the sake of time, I narrowed it down to this list. So fundamentally, what this is all about and what it has been about for 100 years and will continue to be about is Israel's imperial expansion in the region and their plan to establish Greater Israel. According to the founding father of Zionism, Theodor Herzl, the area of the Jewish state stretches from the brook of the Egypt to the Euphrates. The promised land extends from the river of Egypt up to the Euphrates. It includes parts of Syria and Lebanon. When viewed in the current context, including the siege on Gaza, the Zionist plan for the Middle East bears an intimate relationship to the 2003 invasion of Iraq, the 2006 war on Lebanon, the 2011 war on Libya, and the ongoing wars on Syria, Iraq, and Yemen, not to mention the political crisis in Saudi Arabia. The Greater Israel Project consists in weakening and eventually fracturing neighboring Arab states as part of a U.S.-Israeli expansionist project with the support of NATO and Saudi Arabia. NATO, that's very important. In this regard, the Saudi-Israeli rapprochement is, from Netanyahu's viewpoint, a means to expanding Israel's sphere of influence in the Middle East, as well as confronting Iran. Needless to say, the Greater Israel Project is consistent with America's imperial design. And that's, yeah, pretty much, because they've controlled us since they took out Kennedy. And that's why we walk lock and step with everything that they do. And for those who think that it was just maybe, you know, a turn of the century hypothesis, something that wasn't really feasible, thought of by these turn of the century Zionists like Herzl and Jabotinsky. No, you have Odid Yanan, who refreshed the idea in what is called Strategy for Israel in the 1980s. And basically, he writes out a very well-written, well-thought-through plan to carry out this expansion, this imperialist expansion throughout the region. And, you know, call it what it really is. It's an attempt to dominate the globe in multiple business sectors through absorbing large portions of the Middle East, gaining control of their natural resources, because there's a whole lot more there than just oil. And fundamentally, they're trying to take over the world on a political level, on a commerce level. And it has been working because of their partnerships they've made or the people they've blackmailed along the way. Okay, so the Gulf War, 1990-1991, this becomes important in relationship to the attacks on the World Trade Center 93 and Oklahoma City, as they were both meant to maintain an American presence in the region were to actually bring us back into war, as was the case in 1995. And I'll show you a bunch of the propaganda that came out afterwards, trying to link those events to Saddam Hussein. You see, the reason that Saddam had to go is because he was the most powerful government in the region. He was an obstacle to Israeli imperialist expansion. So he was enemy number one. He had to go. It seems like, Afghanistan was a bonus for us when we went in 2001. All right. So the 93 World Trade Center bombing. This one, like, they make such dumb mistakes. It's almost like, how the hell did you allow that to happen? On February 26, 93, a bomb exploded in the parking garage of the World Trade Center in New York City. This event was the first indication for the Diplomatic Security Service that terrorism was evolving from a regional phenomenon outside of the United States to a transnational phenomenon. And these were the guys who actually were involved: Ramzi Youssef, Mohammed Salem, Abdul Yassin, Mahmoud Abu Lima, Ahmed Ajaj, Nidal Ayad, and Ayad Ismoil. So these guys are a bunch of Arabs, right? So why am I saying that Israel was ultimately behind this bombing? Well, because these guys are useful idiots, right? These guys are a mix of real believers, mercenaries who will do what they have to do to feed their families. And pretty much these guys are very easily bought or manipulated by handlers through their religious convictions. The 93 World Trade Center bombing was a terrorist attack on the World Trade Center carried out on February 26, 93, when a truck bomb detonated below the North Tower of the World Trade Center in New York City. The 1336-pound nitrate hydrogen gas enhanced device was intended to send the North Tower crashing into the South Tower, bringing both towers down and killing thousands of people. It failed to do so, but killed six people and injured over 1,000. The attack was planned by a group of terrorists, including Ramzi Youssef and all those guys. They received financing from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who was the uncle of Ramzi Youssef, actually. In March 1994, four men were convicted of carrying out the bombing. The charges included conspiracy, explosive destruction of property, and interstate transportation of explosives. In November 97, two more were convicted: Ramzi Youssef, the mastermind behind the bombings, and Ayad Ismoil, who drove the truck carrying the bomb. So the only problem is that they rented a truck to do this, right, where there's records kept, and the phone number used to rent the truck led back to a known Mossad agent named Josie Hadass. Josie Hadass had been infiltrating Muslim groups in the New York area, and when her name came into the investigation, it was not a name that they hadn't heard before in the counterterrorism unit. Zafar Bangas, editor of Crescent International, an Ontario, Canada-based journal conversant in Islamic politics and one of the most widely read newspapers in the Muslim world, confirmed to this author that Josie Hadass was long established as a Mossad operative. She had penetrated Islamic circles in New York, as had another intelligence operative, Imad Ali Salem, a colonel in Egyptian intelligence. So the person who was handling the useful idiots at the other end was an agent of the Mossad. Then you have people who work for organizations like the Jewish Agency, if not the Mossad directly, like Lori Milroy. And she wrote this book, Study of Revenge, The First World Trade Center Attack and Saddam Hussein's War Against America. So they went to such lengths to try to pin it on Saddam Hussein to get us back involved in that conflict. They put out books, and there were, talking heads planted on news shows. And it was really, it's kind of pathetic when you look at it in hindsight and you see the actual facts. But it seems like at every single one of these, they screw up and one of their guys exposes the operation through doing something stupid, you know, like celebrating before the planes actually hit, right? Yeah. So we'll talk about that. Oklahoma City bombing, same thing in 1995. It was Timothy McVeigh and John Doe number two. John Doe number two was the person who got out and actually lit the fuse on the nitrate bomb. And he was ultimately identified as Anders Karl Strassmeier. He's a German national, former head of security for the white separatist community, Elohim City, Oklahoma. He gained media attention for his alleged connection to the Oklahoma City bombing and has become an important figure in its conspiracy theories, of course. This is from the one and only Wikipedia. I would expect nothing less. from them. But it, you know, as it turns out, he's married to an Israeli, has dual Israeli, Israeli German citizenship. He speaks fluent Israeli or Hebrew, and he is most absolutely an agent of the Mossad, right? So you've got the Mossad connected to both of those, and both of those were attempted to be pinned on Saddam Hussein and Iraq using people like Judith Miller, who ended up going to jail for fraud.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
As you can tell, we didn't buy it. The government knew better. They didn't buy into the propaganda, and it wasn't really much to sway the American public. And this was Andre Strassmeyer, and he's pretty damn close to the drawings that were given of him.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to touch on Al-Qaeda real quick. Al-Qaeda is the base. It's short for the database. It's a name coined by the CIA. Osama bin Laden had not heard the term Al-Qaeda until they said Al-Qaeda on the news. That was his organization. It's really kind of funny. It was coined by the CIA as it was a reference to their database of Mujahideen Afghan fighters to include Osama bin Laden. So the Mujahideen were the Afghan rebels fighting against the Soviets in 1977 to 79-ish. And then we decide, you know, we have to stick our nose in everyone's business. And we did what we did in Afghanistan for a couple of reasons. Number one, it had to do with transplanting the drug trade to the Golden Crescent from the Golden Triangle, right? Because we controlled the heroin trade out of Saigon for many years. And then if you'll notice, the drug trade always seems to follow wars, right? So the war left from Vietnam, where they were growing poppies to make heroin, to Afghanistan, where they're growing poppies to make heroin. So that that you could say that this that the wars that we've had, Vietnam and the original Gulf War and this Gulf War, were really just a continuation of the Opium Wars, the British Opium Wars. So, because that's really the bottom line. The opium production got cut off in 2001 to all-time lows. The Taliban just wasn't having it. And so they basically killed poppy production. So we had to go in there and fix it, because that is where they fund black ops.
Yeah, our CIA, I mean, you got to love them. You know, drug trade, human trafficking, some of the, you know, best people out there working for this wonderful agency to keep America safe, right?
Yeah, so or so it seems. All right, so it was actually founded by this guy right here. This is Zbigniew Brzezinski. He is the founder and he was the head of Al-Qaeda. He was Jimmy Carter's man who he sent to Afghanistan to cut formal deals with people like bin Laden and bin Laden's father, with the Pakistani army. They created a Frankenstein's monster that were basically on the CIA and State Department payroll. And so then the question becomes, since we know that we created, founded, funded, trained Al-Qaeda from the get-go, and we worked with them after 9/11 in Syria, the question is, how could we go about working with an organization who did this to us on 9/11? Unless, you know, we were all in on it together. Because I don't see how you can create something, create an enemy, have the enemy attack you, and then going back to work with that enemy. That makes no sense whatsoever. Shortly, the public will be unable to reason or think for themselves. They'll only be able to parrot the information they've been given on the previous night's news. And that was a quote from Zbigniew Brzezinski in 1972, the man single-handedly responsible for creating Al-Qaeda. Question, when the Soviets justified their intervention by asserting that they intended to fight against a secret involvement of the United States in Afghanistan, people didn't believe them. However, there was a basis of truth. You don't regret anything today? Brzezinski. Regret what? That secret operation was an excellent idea. It had the effect of drawing the Russians into the Afghan trap. And you want me to regret it? The day that the Soviets officially crossed the border, I wrote to President Carter, we now have the opportunity of giving to the USSR its Vietnam War. Indeed, for almost 10 years, Moscow had to carry on a war unsupportable by the government, a conflict that brought about the demoralization and finally the breakup of the Soviet Empire. So you, I guess you could say to some degree that our arming and funding of our enemy really kind of had elements and aspects to it of a psychological warfare campaign, right? So just like the OSS also ran guerrilla missions, these guerrilla type tactics combined with psychological warfare techniques, it seems to be the way that they went in Afghanistan against the Russians, just to go to show how powerful and how much of an impact that combination can have.
And most researchers, the stuff that you're presenting right here, they don't go back and look at these connections.
No, it's always the fucking Illuminati or some shit. Bigfoot did it. So it's like
invisible planes, something like that.
No, man, all the answers are out there. People gotta just go out and read the shit. I mean, and it's like, well, where do I start? Or wherever you want, because trust me, all of it leads to the same goddamn place. Whether you want to start with like World War II or Martin Luther King or whatever, it doesn't matter. Every single path that you take will lead you down to the same road and the same ultimate conclusions, because it's all one event. History is really one big intertwined event. People read fiction, like, just waste their time. Like, history is the best you could ever read, the best spy thrillers. I mean, just amazing stuff, really. All right, so we're going to talk about the neocons. Neocon service typically advocate the promotion of democracy and interventionism in internal affairs, including peace through strength by means of military force, and are known for espousing disdain for communism and political radicalism. But the reality is it's just an American brand of Zionism. They are all pro-Israel to the point where it's one of their top priorities because they are Zionists, and this opened the door for non-Jewish, believers in the cause, so to speak, to kind of rally around this. So neocons are American Zionists. That's pretty much it. And rebuilding America's defenses. A lot of people say, well, this is the proof that they, we're going to do 9/11. They wrote this right before. And they said all the things they're going to do and all those things have happened. Well, yeah, that's absolutely true. But that's not shocking or surprising in any way. This has gone on throughout history. There's always crazy lunatics who control the government who do telescope what they're going to do. And just, read the newspapers like a year or 2 years before any war, and you will see the very slow build of, stories that were seeded to shift the American perspective. And when I see stuff like this, this is a little aggressive.
You see, this thing with the coronavirus stuff, we saw little hints and little seeds a couple of years before this.
Yes, they did it way too quickly. Way too quickly. Most people caught on, right? You've got to do it slow enough so people don't catch on. It's like the boiling frog, right? So they write. Rebuilding America's Defenses, Strategy, Forces, and Resources for a New Century, a report of the Project for a New American Century, September 2000. These guys are a bunch of fucking lunatics. They're all rabid Zionists. They were all part of the Bush administration. This was like their think tank wing. They're a bunch of fucking sickos. I'm going to read through this because you're going to see some things in here that are, it's going to blow your mind. And you'll know when I say it. Establish four core missions for U.S. military forces, defend the American homeland, fight and decisively win multiple simultaneous major theater wars, perform the constabulary duties associated with shaping the security environment in critical regions, and to transform the U.S. forces to exploit the revolution in military affairs. To carry out these core missions, we need to provide sufficient force and budgetary allocations. In particular, the United States must maintain nuclear strategic superiority, basing the U.S. nuclear deterrent upon global nuclear net assessment that weighs the full range of current and emerging threats, not merely the U.S.-Russia balance. Restore the personnel strength of today's force roughly to the levels anticipated in the base force outlined by the Bush administration, an increase in active duty strength from 1.4 to 1.6 million. I don't know if that ever actually came to be. I know that numbers are really down right now. Reposition U.S. forces to respond to 21st century strategic realities by shifting permanently based forces to Southeast Europe. All right, that's important. And Southeast Asia, and by changing naval deployment patterns to reflect growing U.S. strategic concerns in East Asia. Modernize current U.S. forces selectively, proceeding with the F-22 program while increasing purchases of lift, electronic support, and other aircraft, expanding submarine and surface combatant fleets, purchasing Comanche helicopters and medium-weight ground vehicles for the Army, and V-22 Osprey tilt-rotor aircraft for the Marine Corps. So these motherfuckers just want to keep buying weapons. Like, who's fighting us right now? Nobody. Because everyone's got us by the balls, for real. Like, we're not going to war with China. They'll say no more microchips, right? So we're fucked. We the rich fucks outsourced everything, right? Every country could be like, yeah, we're not doing that anymore. Sorry.
All warfare now. That's why they're doing it all, behind the scenes on the down low.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, these guys just want to spend all our money on blowing people up, right? Get their friends who own these companies, and they sit on the boards of various companies, just make them some more money. It's really kind of sick. All right, so cancel roadblock programs such as the Joint Strike Fighter, CAVX. I didn't think this paragraph was too important. I'm going to go ahead and skip it. Develop and deploy global missile defenses to defend the American homeland and American allies, and to provide a secure basis for U.S. power projection around the world. Control the new international commons of space and cyberspace, and pave the way for the creation of a new military service, U.S. Space Forces. All right? This is 2000. This is 20 years ago. Within the mission of space control. All right? So this wasn't some brilliant fucking thing that Trump thought of. All right, this is like some bullshit that they've been planning for years as a way to justify new military spending. And this doesn't have shit to do with aliens, okay? Nothing. No aliens have anything to do with this. This is all about us spending more money and maintaining control of the planet.
Weapons, weapons that they've probably been working on for years, these massive destructive war weapons.
Yeah. And if there are fucking aliens out there, like us shooting our nukes at them is like flicking a rubber band. You might as well do the same fucking thing. So fuck. These guys are a bunch of idiots. I hate them. And exploit the revolution in military affairs to ensure the long-term superiority of U.S. conventional forces. Establish a two-stage transformation process which maximizes the value of current weapon systems through the application of advanced technologies, and produce more profound improvements in military capabilities, encourage competition between single services and joint service experimentation efforts, increase defense spending gradually to a minimum level of 3.5 to 3.8% of gross domestic product, adding $15 billion to $20 billion to total defense. This is just an absolutely irresponsible allocation of funds, period. These guys are fucking lunatics, and this is nothing. They know there's nobody out to get us. They know everything. They know this is all bullshit, but it keeps the cycles going. The surplus gets handed down pretty much to the police agencies. So it's the big cycle of making money and screwing the little guy, as usual. All right, so now we're going to touch upon who actually controlled the White House. And, Bush's inner circle, about 50-something people, 31 of them were Jewish Zionists who either had a dual citizenship with Israel or their parents participated in the founding or were Israeli citizens or something along those lines. Elliot Abrams, who is back in action today, right? So Elliot Abrams, who went to prison over something. I don't even know. He's too late in history, not my expertise, but he's a douchebag just like all the rest of them. And he is back in action working with Trump. All these other people, you probably know some of these names. Michael Chertoff, we'll talk about him a little later on. Douglas Feith, Ari Fleischer, David Frum. These guys are the worst of the worst Zionist neocons on the planet. Loyal to, not the United States. Three pages of them, 31 total. Obama actually had 34. Trump is the lowest at 15. So that's interesting. I'll have to try to decode that one. Okay, so leading up to 9/11, we have the Zim American Israel Shipping Company. It was the predecessor to the company of the present Zim Integrated Shipping Services and was 49% owned by the Israeli government on 9/11. In 2004, the Israeli government sold their 49% interest to the Israeli Offer Brothers Group, which then became the sole owner of the company. On 9/11, Zim's headquarters was in Haifa, Israel, and it had worldwide regional offices in Hong Kong, Hamburg, Germany, Manhattan, New York, and Norfolk, Virginia. Norfolk, Virginia, it becomes interesting because they were there scoping out facilities to open a new headquarters at the same time that Mohammed Atta was living in that area. So it's a little too coincidental for me. Zim Shipping moved out of the towers, breaking a $50,000 a month lease 1 week before 9/11. Okay, so 9/11 itself, you had 265 dead on the four airplanes, 2,606 people in the World Trade Center itself. Most of them were Marshall McLennan and Cantor Fitzgerald employees. I think they accounted for something like 1,800 out of the 2,600. 343 firefighters, 71 law enforcement, and hundreds of police, firefighters, and medics have died due to inhalation of toxic particles stemming from their response to the attacks. This goes on, look at this, the peak was in 2018. You know, 26 firefighters died that year from particulate inhaled at the Twin Towers. There's some controversy over whether or not they had asbestos. Some say it was removed. Some say it was still there. Who the hell knows? But something's killing these people. And so these should all be included in the tally.
That's something you really don't hear much about often either is you know, the fire police that have died after the fact.
Yeah, this is just firefighters. If you include police, the numbers are very similar. I've seen the numbers. They have them posted on a couple websites. And usually it's around 15 to 20 a year on average. So, you know, you're looking at like, what, close to 50 people a year at its peak dying from this years later. The toll of the wars since, 800,000 dead as a result of ensuing wars. But, you know, I just swore the numbers were much higher than that. They're probably closer to double that, realistically, if you include things like sanctions. And so the events of 9/11 have had a devastating impact on our country, led to the deaths of so many fucking people. It's mind-boggling. It leaves one speechless. So I'm not going to cover, you know, the buildings fell too fast or none of that bullshit. I'm not getting into whether there was thermite or any of those stupid questions that don't matter. The things that matter are who did it, how did they do it, why did they do it, and which Americans helped facilitate it, right? You want to approach this like you're making a legal case. And if someone burns your fucking house down, you know, you want to know who burned your house down. It shouldn't matter what the hell they burnt your house down with, right? So people, you know, they have all these thermite theories and all this nonsense, and it's a factor. It's not the biggest factor, and it's a factor that you're never going to find an answer to, right? So you go off chasing it, leads nowhere. When there are paths of investigation that can take you down very, very stable sort of paths of information, right? So there's legitimate places to get information, and there's things that you can chase forever. Like, I bet you can go to the 9/11 forums and stuff like that. And those things are all run by the fucking CIA. You go in there and start asking real questions, you get banned. You know, I got banned from like every JFK forum I ever posted in. And
the cause of whatever brought the towers down. That's a great piece of the puzzle, but
right,
you know, who's behind it? We need to, you know, justice is what I'd more be interested in.
Right, right. You know, and then you have people who are like profiteers who like go around and they make money off of this shit. You know, Richard Gage of was Architects and Engineers. Like, I went and saw that guy once, and he fucking handed out a hat to put money in like four times. It was like, give it up, dude. We're here to get some information. You know, this why you would try to hit everybody up for cash is beyond me. The dancing Israelis, in some circles, it has been well known since September 11th that a group of Israeli Jews were witnessed celebrating the attacks on the World Trade Center buildings on 9/11. Two of them were already listed on the counterintelligence database. Their story unravels a covert operation where Al-Qaeda was receiving financial and logistical support from foreign state intelligence agencies. Recently, some of the pictures they took on the day where they were witnesses hugging each other, giving high fives, and flicking lighters like they were at a rock concert. They've been released by the FBI, although heavily redacted, and we'll take a look at some of those pictures. But the dancing Israelis, and I'll explain in detail exactly what happened with them. There are Yaron Shmel, Odette Elner, Savon Kurtzberg, Omar Momari, and Paul Kurtzberg. For people who have already done some homework in 9/11, much of this is going to be review. But it is still extremely important information. You don't really see too many new videos coming out about 9/11. So Urban Movie Systems was owned by a guy named Dominic Suter. Now, Dominic Suter, when you go and pull his history, between 1991 and 2013, he opened dozens of businesses across the United States and then was removed as director from each within 1 to 3 years. Now, these were all Mossad front companies. These were all businesses that were set up to give their guys cover as though they...
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
They had a legitimate employment. They did not. That's why they would only last 1 to 3 years. They would shut down and hop to another city. Wherever a business was needed, this guy would go and set one up. So... all right, so this is from a news article, June 21st, 2002, where Israelis detained on September 11th spies. Millions saw the horrific images of the World Trade Center attacks, and those who saw them won't forget them. But a New Jersey homemaker saw something that morning that prompted an investigation into five young Israelis and their possible connection to Israeli intelligence. Maria, who asked us not to use her last name, had a view of the World Trade Center from her New Jersey apartment building. She remembers a neighbor calling her shortly after the first plane hit the towers. She grabbed her binoculars and watched the destruction unfolding in Lower Manhattan. But as she watched the disaster, something else caught her eye. Maria says she saw three young men kneeling on the roof of a white van in the parking lot of her apartment building. They seemed to be taking a movie, Maria said. The men were taking video or photos of themselves with the World Trade Center burning in the background, she said. What struck Maria were the expressions on the men's faces. They were like happy, you know. They didn't look shocked to me. I thought that was very strange. She found the behavior so suspicious that she wrote down the license plate number of the van and called the police. Before long, the FBI was also on scene, and a statewide bulletin was issued for the van. The plate number was traced to a van owned by a company called Urban Moving Systems around 4 p.m. on September 11th. The van was spotted on a service road off Route 3 near New Jersey's Giant Stadium. A police officer pulled the van over, finding five men between 22 and 27 years old in the vehicle. The men were taken out of the van at gunpoint and handcuffed by the police. The arresting officer said that they saw a lot that aroused their suspicion about the men. One of the passengers had $47 in cash hidden in his sock. Another was carrying two foreign passports. A box cutter was found in the van. But perhaps the biggest surprise for the officers came when the five men identified themselves as Israeli citizens. "We are not your problem. Our problems are your problems. The Palestinians are the problem." That was what I believe Yaron Shmel said to the cop as he was being pulled out of the vehicle. When the men were transferred to jail, the case was transferred out of FBI's criminal division and into the Bureau's foreign counterintelligence section, which is responsible for espionage cases, ABC News has learned. One reason for the shift, sources told ABC News, was that the FBI believed the Urban Moving may have been providing cover for an Israeli intelligence operation. After the five men were arrested, the FBI got a warrant and searched Urban Moving Systems' Weehawken, New Jersey offices. The FBI searched Urban Moving Systems' offices for several hours, removing boxes of documents and a dozen computer hard drive. The FBI also questioned Urban Moving's owner. His attorney insists that his client answered all the FBI's questions, but when FBI agents tried to interview him again a few days later, he was gone and he had fled back to Israel.
And the only time you ever hear that story about the dancing Israelis is, you know, from someone, not the mainstream media, of course, but someone who says, you know, doing an investigation on YouTube or a podcast or something like that. But the detail that that you just went over is something that I've never even heard before, and that's a huge piece.
Yeah, this information's been out there for a while. It's usually associated with, like, poorly made shit conspiracy videos that try to associate it with, like, fucking laser beams from space that took out the towers or some dumb shit. Mini nukes that don't give off radiation, you know, stuff like that. So this is just an article that I pulled, showed, this is, you know, this is documented. This was in the newspapers. It's still out there. And yet just gets ignored. I mean, obviously they were there. They set up at 8:05, right? I think I have a list here. Yeah. They set up camera equipment at 8:05. Police were called due to the celebrating, provided a description of the van. They had taken 76 photographs and videos. Now the video camera was handed off at a place called White Glove Movers, which was a stop that they made after they had recorded it. Simon Persberg, seen on 910 at Durick Towers in the elevator, pulled over in New Jersey in the afternoon, because of the bolo. Yes. So the day before, Simon Kurtzberg was seen at Durick Towers and he was in the elevator when confronted. He said he was a construction worker, but there was no construction work going on in the building. And then they were pulled over in New Jersey because of the bolo went out of the radio. So there was another van marked Urban Moving Systems that was located by the FBI after the first plane hit and before the tower fell. It was in the parking garage. It was marked Urban Moving Systems. And on the news broadcast, which we'll play here in a little bit, we've got about 10 minutes of news clips from that day that we're going to play here shortly. You'll see it in there, but basically the FBI did found a bomb under the towers. And, although they called it a suspicious device over the air, but of course they have to do that. But yeah, a bomb was found in a van marked Urban Moving Systems. That went over the radio, went out to New Jersey with the FBI, fire department, everybody knew about it. So, and that was one of the reasons why when they were pulled over later in the afternoon in New Jersey, they were told to approach with caution, because the other van with the same markings had the suspicious device in it, right? So that is why they told them to approach with caution, not just because they were celebrating at Durick Towers. That's very important. They told them as they were getting out to approach car, caution because of the explosives found earlier. So you don't really need much more evidence than the transcripts of the fire department, the FBI, and the police and the Jersey Highway Patrol, that there were bombs there, bombs that you can pretty much, you know, the cops weren't making it up, right? That's a given. So they make up a lot of shit, but not that, right? So you don't really need much more proof that there were bombs involved. Now, the debate is whether there were bombs inside the towers. I feel that there were. They had the means, motive, opportunity, all that stuff. Some people I know, I greatly respect, don't think there were bombs in the tower, but that's a whole nother conversation. So they found a notepad in the van, and it had names and phone numbers all in it for White Glove Movers and a bunch of other Mossad front companies, Magic Heating and Plumbing, and we'll see a deep connection to that coming up here in a minute. So they gave a bunch of conflicting stories, and then yet their release 2 months later was signed off on by Michael Chertoff of the Bush administration. Okay, they got signed off at the highest levels. He was in charge of the Justice Department's criminal division, and he just had them deported back to Israel. That was it. They failed all the lie detectors. I mean, it was a shit show, and they knew what happened. They knew who they were, and they let them go. Benjamin Chertoff was the co-author of the article that came out in Popular Mechanics, Debunking 9/11 Lies. He's the cousin of Michael Chertoff, right? So I just wanted to throw this in there to show that these fucks all stick to family, and they all spread out over multiple industries that do nothing but sway popular opinion. These are some of the photographs that they took. They're heavily redacted here. The backgrounds are taken out. Backgrounds taken out there. Faces are taken out. Yaron Schmel is middle left in the overalls. It is mentioned in the police report. He got married on 9/11 the following year. Based on mugshots, the man with ripped jeans and is Paul Kurtzberg. The far left is his brother Sivan. And the far right is Oded Elmer, not pictured as Omar Mamari, who may have taken that picture. This is a photograph of Kurtzberg. He's flicking a lighter. And they have redacted the backgrounds where you can see the towers. I think you might be able to see a little bit of them right there. But yeah, this is heavily redacted. This one is entirely redacted. Like, they took everything out. What was going on here, who knows, but the entire photograph was redacted. This is just a shot from the FBI report, you know, talking about the incident with some details just to show that this is a real thing. This isn't some conspiracy theory. And I thought this was hilarious because the evidence mounts that Bin Laden was behind the attacks. Yet in the same article in Boston, the FBI issued an alert for a white Chevy van placed in urban moving systems. Right. So it's like, they can't keep their fucking story straight. It's hilarious. All right. What is next? All right. These are the two men who were arrested near the George Washington Bridge with a truck full of explosives. This went out over the news that night. You'll see it on the little clip we're going to play here shortly. But these are the two men. I could not locate them. What's that?
Is that the clip you sent me earlier?
Yes.
Okay, I got it.
All right, cool. So these these shitbags got arrested with a full truck of explosives. What happened to them? Who knows? Did they go to jail? No. Nah, they probably just got deported back to Israel because, you know why. All right. Israeli surveillance of the future hijackers and FBI suspects in the September 11th attacks and their failure to give us adequate warning, the need for a public inquiry. Okay, now this is really important. There was a massive – Israel's always spying on us, right? Because we're not really friends, right? We're friends who are forced into our situation, and the few lunatics up the top who are actually friends with them, they fucking hate them, you know, also. They just can't say anything. So the reality is that they are constantly spying on us. After 9/11, they rounded up about 200 Israeli spies and had them deported. So that was sometime in mid-2002. So they acted quick, rounded up over 200 spies and kicked them the hell out of the country. Prior to 9/11, there were, you talk about Israeli art students, right? And people say, oh, well, there was Israeli art students in the building and they did this fucked up shit. We're moving a window and, you know, and the bomb triggers and a whole bunch of stuff, right? So were they involved? Possibly. I don't know. Not my cup of tea. But the real problem with the Israeli art students was not related to that. It was related to spying on the Drug Enforcement Agency. And so our art students, one of them was actually dating one of the dancing Israelis. There's a connection there somewhere. I don't recall exactly what it was. But one of them was dating one of the dancing Israelis. So there is that connection. And so they were trying to sell paintings to the DEA. And these paintings, they weren't just paintings. They were listening devices. And so some of them had glitter and they used like LIDAR and lasers and they could tell what people were saying. They had some laser beam that they could hit the painting with and they were able to translate that into the words that they were saying and hear them. Pretty interesting spy technology, but that's what was going on. And they knew it. A bunch of them got busted, I believe, and were deported because none of these fucks ever go to jail, or these fucks should be hung in the fucking public square, like the old days. Okay, so the conclusion of Gerald Shea, the lawyer behind the memorandum, is the same as my own and Raimondo, who wrote, the Israelis were engaged in spying on U.S. soil in the months leading up to the 9/11 terrorist attacks, that these agents were concentrated in the two areas where the 9/11 hijackers lived and planned their atrocities, Hollywood, Florida, and the two counties in New Jersey, Bergen and Hudson, and that they did not share all they knew about the preparations for the attacks with U.S. authorities. That means they had foreknowledge of the attacks at minimal, and apparently some of them couldn't keep it together and were caught rejoicing as hundreds of Americans died instantly when Flight 11 crashed into the North Tower. Thousands more would follow, and that's from Ryan Dawson, dancingisraelis.com. Yeah, so they knew, not because they were trying to do us a favor and spy on Arab terrorists to protect us. No, they were handling them. The dancing Israelis had also moved around city to city and had lived within, 10, 15 miles of the hijackers pretty much at all times. They were paired up moving around the country. So Mossad ran 9/11 Arab hijacker terrorist operation. British intelligence reported in February 2002 that the Israeli Mossad ran the Arab hijacker cells that were later blamed by the U.S. government's 9/11 commission for carrying out the aerial attacks on the World Trade Center and Pentagon. WMR has received details of the British intelligence report, which was suppressed by the government of then Prime Minister Tony Blair. Al-Mossad unit consisting of six Egyptian and Yemeni-born Jews infiltrated Al-Qaeda cells in Hamburg. the Ada Mamoun Darkhamzali settle, South Florida, and Sharjah in the United Arab Emirates in the months before 9/11. The Mossad not only infiltrated cells, but began to run them and give them specific orders that would eventually culminate in their being on board four regularly scheduled flights originating in Boston, Washington, Dulles, and Newark, New Jersey on 9/11, right? So a British intelligence report did come out. This is verified that the Israelis were basically running these terrorist cells. All right, so this story is pretty interesting. FBI probes death of driver's license examiner. A woman gave licenses to men being checked for terrorist links. The death of a Tennessee driver license examiner accused of helping six illegal immigrants get false driver's licenses was no accident, the FBI said Friday. Catherine Smith, who was found burned to death in her car early Sunday, a day before she was to be arraigned on federal charges, she helped five Middle Eastern men and one juvenile get fake driver's licenses earlier this month. The five adults are under investigation for possible ties to the September 11th terrorist attacks, law enforcement officials said. Smith's car was on fire when it struck a utility pole on a rural highway about 30 miles from Memphis, FBI agent Susan Nash said Wednesday. Smith's clothing had been soaked with gasoline, leaving her burned beyond recognition, according to authorities. The FBI said Smith's death was either a homicide or a suicide. Yeah, she poured gasoline on herself and lit herself on fire and then drove down the road. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this basically tells the story. So what happened was she was working at in Memphis, Tennessee as a driver's license, you know, person. And I guess Tennessee had lax laws. You didn't need a social security number to get a license. But there were other like checks and balances in place. So terrorists don't get driver's licenses. Well, she cut a deal with them for $1,000 per license to make them the IDs. And they weren't really fake IDs. They were actually legit IDs, but she just was bypassing the she was bypassing all the safeguards in the computer system and just printing them out and saying, here you go, at $1,000 a pop. That's not bad, you know, $6,000 for about 10 minutes work. So basically, they get ratted on. The FBI shows up. Everyone goes to jail. Now, the people involved were Catherine Smith, Abdel Mashid Hamad, Khalid Odala, Muhammad Al-Faris, Sakira Hamad, Mustafa Abu Shaheen. And when Sakira Hamad was arrested, he was arrested with a pass to the six basement levels of Tower 1 in his pocket or in his wallet, dated September 5th, 2001. He had a card for Magic Heating and Plumbing. That was the company he worked for. Sergei Denko, who is an Israeli, the owner of Denko Mechanical and Magic Heating and Plumbing, told authorities that Sakira was working in the towers for him a few days. However, the Port Authority didn't actually hire them as they provide their own workers. So he did have a forged pass to get into the towers. Sergei Denko, an Israeli, is the one who vouched for him and said that, yes, he was working in the towers. You know, I mean, like, hello. And this is kind of the connection between that incident with Sakira Hamad and the dancing Israelis and ultimately the Mossad. So Sakira busted with the pass to Magic Heating and Plumbing, and that was a front company run by Sergei Denko, who also ran Denko Mechanical. These were Mossad front companies. The Mossad provided the funding. They do it through a series of intermediaries. It's the same old fucking story. White Glove Movers was connected to the Dancing Israelis because they stopped there and dropped off the video, and they had the notepad, and the notepad had the contact information for all these fucks in there, right? Okay, but they're all Arabs, right? Everyone's like, well, these guys are all Arabs, so how the hell is it worked that Israel did this? So fundamentally, I drew this out to kind of show the flow of how this works. You have the Mossad who are planning things, right? And they give their orders to the CIA, not the other way around. I think the CIA had their balls cut off a long time ago. But they do provide surveillance info to the Mossad to keep them one step ahead. Like every time the hijackers, every time they were about to wiretap somebody or change something in regards to how they were investigating, they would up and change their paths of communication. They would get new phones. They would move. They would do things. So it seemed like they were always one step ahead of the FBI. And the reason for that, well, there were a couple of reasons. The CIA was feeding information to the Mossad, but also Mossad were spying on them. They were spying on the CIA and the FBI and all these guys through a company called Comverse. Comverse is a telecommunications company, has Pentagon contracts, has contracts with the CIA. But the reality is, They are backdoored directly to Israel so that they can monitor all of our government communications. That is reality. One day I'll have to do a show on the Promis network. Promis is fucking insane. When you hear the story of Promis, which is computer software that ended up being what the NSA is using today, a much more advanced version. When you hear about Promis way back in like the 80s and 90s, it's going to blow your fucking mind.
Right. I've heard a little bit about it, but yeah, we definitely need to do a show about that.
Yeah, one of the key people involved in the smuggling of this Promis software out of the country worked for fucking Jack Ruby in the 60s. You know, it's these connections never end. They just really don't. Man, I can't wait till we get to the last couple slides, man, because they fucking really rocked my world. And I hope they...
It's a psycho family.
It's a big psycho inbred fucking family. That's exactly what it is. So it goes from the Mossad to Israeli case officers to their Arabic handler, who oftentimes is Jewish. And, you know, that's the thing, once again, with the dual loyalty. You know, a lot of the guys who infiltrated these organizations for 9/11, they were, you know, Egyptian Jews or Moroccan Jews. They were Middle Eastern.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Appearing Jews who were very easily used to slip in and infiltrate Muslim organizations, right? And then they control them, and that's how that flows. And the people who actually fly the planes into the buildings, yeah, they're probably real believers. And they were manipulated by their handlers into doing it. But you didn't really have to do a lot of convincing. You know, I'll do it for Allah, you know? But they're useful idiots or mercenaries. Or some people do it because their families are promised to be taken care of, right? When you live in the fucking desert, you don't have any goddamn money. You're going to go out and kill whoever they got to kill to make sure your family gets taken care of. So that's kind of how that works. All right, here we are. We're coming too close to the end. Like I said, this is only a very brief overview. I just wanted to point out a lot of the Israeli connections. But we're going to talk about Riggs Bank. Riggs Bank was called the Bank of the Presidents. It has been around for hundreds of years. We've only been around for, 250? So, yeah, probably 150 years. I think, like, Grover Cleveland, it was his bank. You know, Abraham Lincoln, I think, had an account there. It was, like, the bank that presidents use. And it was sued over the 9/11 attacks because it failed to report that the Saudi embassy and accounts that should have been flagged were not flagged, and they ended up sending money to 9/11 terrorists using Riggs Bank. But Riggs Bank, when you really do your digging, is a fucking very, very important staple in American history that Riggs Bank is my current focus of research, and somebody else who you might know. We're going to talk about him in a second, but here we go. So Riggs Bank is sued over 9/11 attacks for allowing the money transfers to go through. The boldest filing was the suit which seeks class action status against Riggs National Corporation and its banking unit Riggs. Constant failure to comply with banking oversight laws resulted in funds being forwarded from high-risk Saudi embassy accounts at Riggs Bank to at least two September 11th hijackers. The suit, drafted by the torts firm Motley Rice of Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, alleges. And that's from the Wall Street Journal, 9/13/2004. And then there was a large-scale investigation of Riggs Bank, and you know how this shit works. Oh, they investigate. Ah, you get a fine, right? So, but this last slide that I'm going to show you, anybody who has seen my work on Kennedy, anybody who understands who that man that was that took off Kennedy's head, if you know who that person is, then you need to know that he also sat on the board of Riggs Bank, the one and only Jack Valente. Sat on the board of Riggs Bank at the time of 9/11. He was on the board of Riggs Bank in 1982. He was on there for 22 years. And in 2004, they retired him in 2004. 2004, everything came to an end for him. And he just lived out the last couple of years of his life, walking free, unlike many of the people that he killed or was involved in their deaths. But Jack Valente, the man on the knoll, also sat on, he was the longest running director of the company. And they allowed the transfer of funds from the Saudi embassy to the hijackers. Okay. That was not an incidental oversight. That, I should hope, will show how deeply embedded certain people are in our government in this level of corruption.
Yeah,
because even though he was only even though Jack Lenny was only with Lyndon Johnson for 3 years in the White House, he didn't get a security clearance until he walked out the door. He was CIA asset his entire life. That's beyond proven just in the Jack Valenti file. And then the evidence, when you look at the WikiLeaks leaked cables for both Valenti and Kissinger and Riggs Bank, I got nearly 1,000 freaking pages of cables just surrounding those three fucking guys, mostly about Riggs Bank that I'm trying to sort through. It's a bitch. It's all aliases and CIA speak. But I just thought that it was mind-blowing that the man who was involved in the Kennedy assassination, who's probably had a hand in every single assassination and terrorist attack since in this country, sat on the board of Riggs Bank at the time of 9/11, probably fully aware of everything that was going on and was going to happen. So, yeah. And I believe that is going to do it for my presentation tonight. Not a real long one. I didn't want to go too deep into a whole lot of this stuff. I just felt like... For some of the younger people who didn't know any of this stuff, had to be exposed to it.
Yeah, this stuff is extremely profound when it comes to evidence that, you know, most of this stuff I haven't even heard before. And, you know, to get this out, I think, is extremely important. Excellent research.
Do we get any questions in chat?
Let's see if we have any questions. Mainly about how Building 7 fell so fast.
I don't know, guys. How do you think it fell so fast? Hello.
How did they hide the Pentagon video?
So a plane hit the fucking Pentagon. Okay?
Right.
The plane hit the Pentagon. A plane hit the Pentagon. I'm going to say it again. A fucking plane hit the goddamn Pentagon. There is the landing gear.
That it was a missile that hit it.
No. No. Okay, common sense. You got a plane, you want to crash it, and you want to give the appearance that a plane hit the Pentagon. So why the fuck not just fly the plane into the Pentagon, right? It doesn't make any sense to do anything but, oh, they flew it to some secret base and all the people got off. Like, you're going into the realm of crazy here, okay? A plane hit the Pentagon. Those fucking people are dead. They got all the DNA except for like one person. One of the hijackers, I might say, who definitely was not on that plane, right? Who they say was where with the hijackers is not accurate. One of those planes, 93, I think, had 6 hijackers, okay? So, you know, it's they bullshitted us about that, too.
Seriously?
No, like, those things don't matter, right? No, right. Those things, they matter to a certain degree, but just broaden your scope. They're much more important things. You know, we need actual names of people who had certain meetings and made decisions, and, like, that is what's important, like, not what the fuck they blew the building up with. You know, the buildings were goddamn blown up. It's plain and simple. Skyscrapers don't crumble on their own. Common sense. Plus the bombs found in the basement of the towers. So you don't need crazy conspiracy theories. You have facts and you have real names and you have people with MOs. I've explained all this before. You know, I'm a history guy, not a conspiracy guy, right? I like proof. I like to know that this can be, things can be solved and they can be solved. You just got to put in the fucking work. You just got to put in the work.
I mean, that the other stuff is important to a certain degree, but the real goal is to get to who is behind this and to try and seek justice for one of the most, you know, heinous events of our modern history.
Yeah, I see justice at the end of a guillotine, and that's about it. Right. We're not getting any congressional hearings that mean a shit, nothing. It's all fixed. These people got to go. They got to go. All of them.
Yep.
All of them.
That's going to be the only way to make any changes.
You know, and this cool. I don't know, is this slide still up on the screen?
Yes.
All right, so just take a look at these names. Google some of these names. Look who these people's parents were. Look at these people's associations. What boards of directors did they sit on? What mobsters sat on boards of directors with these people? You answer those questions, you'll know who controlled the world for the last 50 years. You know? Jack Valenti was right up there at the freaking top. When I found out that Jack Valenti sat on the board of Riggs Bank, my fucking head exploded. The significance was so, like, it stopped me dead in my tracks. Dead in my tracks. And the last of the answers I'm looking for in Kennedy, I have reason to believe I will find them through Riggs Bank. So it's all very important. And this all ties back to, you know, 1979 and the Safari Club and BCCI. And, like, it connects to everything. All the important events and all the things that people need to know the answers to all flowed through Riggs Bank at one point or another. So that is where I'll be spending the next couple of years of my life. Probably.
Yeah.
So and, I already know how much work it is. Like I can see the paths, and it's going to take goddamn forever. Like,
you've done a great job so far. And oh yeah, we do need to definitely do that that Promise Software show.
Yeah. So definitely, but I want to play that video. If you got that video queued up, let's end playing that video, because this is some of the most important news coverage you'll ever see. Talking about the bombs, talking about all kinds of stuff, talking about the package found underneath the tower. I mean, it talks about everything. We got about 10 minutes worth of clips here, so go ahead and let me stop sharing. All right, screen share is done.
Okay, all right. Here, hold on. You want to call your mother or something?
You got to get back. Mom, you got to get back.
All right? Don't worry about me. You need to make calls right now.
We just heard another explosion. They're handing out gloves and masks.
NBC's Pat Dawson is close to the scene of that attack. Pat?
Just moments ago, I spoke to the chief of safety for the New York City Fire Department. He received word of the possibility of a secondary device, that is another bomb, going off. He tried to get his men out as quickly as he could, but he said that there was another explosion which took place. And then an hour after the first hit here, with the first crash that took place, he said there was another explosion that took place. In one of the towers here. According to his theory, he thinks that there were actually devices that were planted in the building. The second device, he speculates, was probably planted in the building.
But as soon as I got outside, I heard a second explosion and another rumble. And then a fire marshal came in and said we had to leave because if there was a third explosion, this building might not last.
And you were working there?
Yes, I was right there. I was down in the basement, came down, all of a sudden the elevator blew up, smoke. I dragged the guy out, his skin was hanging off, and I dragged him out, and I helped him out to the ambulance.
Thank you. Right?
Somebody said that they saw an airliner going to one of those towers. Then, an hour later than that, we had that big explosion from much, much lower. I don't know what on earth caused that.
We've heard reports of secondary explosions after the aircraft impacted. Whether, in fact, there wasn't something else at the base of the towers that, in fact, were the coup de grace to bring them to the ground.
Do we have Jim Smith available on microphone from Chopper 2 as he takes these pictures? Jim?
Yes, I am here, Michael.
Jim, tell us what's happening out there.
Oh, we just witnessed some kind of secondary follow-up explosion on the World Trade Center number 2, the one that is on the south that is difficult to make out.
As effective as a bomb being dropped there, there were two bombs in effect. Commercial airliners flown into those two buildings and they came down. We presume because of the initial explosion, there may have been secondary explosions as well that were detonated in the building by these terrorists.
That would put us about a block and a half away from the site of where the explosion was. That area has just been evacuated because police have found what they describe as a suspicious device, and they fear that it might be something that could lead to another explosion. Obviously, there's a real sense of caution here on the part of police. I spoke with some police officials moments ago, Chris, and they told me that they have reason to believe that one of the explosions at the World Trade Center, aside from the ones that may have been caused by the impact of the plane with the building, may have been caused by a van that was parked in the building that may have had some type of explosive device in it. So their fear is that there may have been explosive device planted either in the building or in the adjacent area.
I think a bomb went off in the lobby first, then a plane hit the building, then another plane hit the other building. But when I was coming through the doors on the other side of the Trade Center, something, either they blew the lobby up or something, because it blew the glass out of the doors and knocked us all down, and I got smoke and everything on me. I just feel a little shook up because I got blasted, you know. So
the ladies that are with me were in the World Trade Center in the first building and escaped through the lobby, where they report they believe there was a bomb in the lobby.
And even the turnstile was burnt and was sticking up, and they just told us to run.
And as we were coming out, we passed the lobby. There was no lobby. So I believe the bomb hit the lobby first, and a couple of seconds in the first plane hit.
And all of a sudden, it sounded like, I don't know where the subway is, but it sounded like a subway collision, a bomb. And it was just pounding, boom, boom, boom. And I literally thought the subway. subway had exploded and all the cars couldn't land on top of it. It was so loud.
I was actually in the subway heading towards the World Trade Center right around Franklin Street. And after the first explosion, the subway station started to fill with smoke. The subway cars started to fill with smoke, and the subways actually stopped.
It was that he was in the lobby of World Trade Center 1 when the first plane hit. And when the debris started coming down, he went back to go into the building to protect himself and was in the revolving doors going back in off West Street when he looked up and a fireball came flying out and blew out all the windows and threw him back onto the street.
Once the plane hit the top, then that's when the bomb was going off on the first floor. It's like the plane was actually hitting the first floor. You were hearing boom, 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 boom.
Explosion that was in the World Trade Center at about 8:46 a.m. in the morning. The explosion came from, I believe, at first we believed that it came from the mechanical room. And then we heard a series of other explosions that sounded up on the above levels of the building to where we then realized that there was something wrong and there was a major problem.
What happened?
There was an explosion. He was in the lobby and the third explosion, the whole lobby collapsed on us.
What was it like?
Horrible.
It's like hell. You don't want to know.
The whole building just collapsed on us inside the lobby.
Was that a secondary explosion?
Yes, it was.
That was the plan probably?
Yeah, definitely a secondary explosion. But we was inside waiting to go upstairs. And on the way upstairs, the whole fucking plane blew. And we just collapsed on everybody inside the lobby.
So was the first tower coming down, secondary?
I don't know about the first one, but I know the second one, it was terrible. Then there was a third one, too, after that one.
That's
right. Everybody was inside the building, waiting to go upstairs, and they just let loose. Everything just let loose inside the building.
So what you told me is that there was plane or whatever hit the building, and then a secondary explosion.
It was like three explosions after that. We came in after the fire. We came when the fire was going on already. We was in the staging area inside the building, waiting to go upstairs.
The whole
lobby collapsed on the lobby inside. Right in front of our eyes. It was so surreal, like a movie set.
Second and third explosion, right?
We were in the building for the third one. It collapsed. We were on this drive here for the other one. This is on top of this. This could be no worse than this. Could be nothing no more than this. You're in the building trying to help people, and it's exploding on the inside the building. So I don't think we're getting any worse than this.
Joining me is Jack Kelly. Now, he is a foreign correspondent. He has some information about these attacks. Jack, what can you tell us happened first in New York?
Apparently, what appears to happen was that at the same time two planes hit the building, that the FBI most likely thinks that there was a car or truck packed with explosives underneath the buildings, which also exploded at the same time and brought both of them down.
Now, that's the first time we're hearing that. So two planes and explosives that were in the building, is that correct?
That is the working theory at this point. That is still unconfirmed, but that is what the FBI is going on at this point.
The New York City Police Department has a report that the FBI is responding to New Jersey because a truck reportedly loaded with explosives has been stopped by authorities on the road there, and the men with that truck have been detained. Members of the Joint Terrorist Task Force, according to the New York police officials, are responding to question those people. I want to underline that all the phones to police headquarters and to the FBI from here seem to be disabled.
They stopped the truck, they found an entire truck full of explosives, and they arrested them. Those two men and their explosives are in police custody tonight, and another tragedy has been averted.
Still alive in the rubble in and around the World Trade Center. And word late tonight that two suspects are in FBI custody after a truckload of explosives was discovered around the George Washington Bridge. That bridge links New York to New Jersey over the Hudson River. Whether the discovery of those explosives had anything to do with other events of the day is unclear, but the FBI has two suspects in hand, said the truck load of explosives, enough explosives were in the truck to do great damage to the George Washington Bridge. But they arrested the two suspects and they're questioning them as we speak.
George Washington Bridge, Marcia.
Well, you know, Todd, it's really an amazing thing. Most of New York City's rescue operations and their police and fire departments have been concentrating their actions down in lower Manhattan, where the planes, two planes, hit the two towers of the World Trade Center. But some very intelligent and aggressive cops also stopped another terrorist attack from happening on the George Washington Bridge. CBS2 has learned exclusively that two men are in custody tonight after being arrested at the George Washington Bridge with an entire truckload of explosives.
All right. Yeah.
So, you know, like I've said before, you want to know what happened on any particular about in regards to any particular event, watch the day of. The day of footage always has things that get out to the media that were unintended. Always.
Cool. We're good. Thank you so much, Corey. Fantastic information, and I'm sure we're going to be doing it again very shortly.
Yes, and also this week coming up, I will have another episode of Beyond Classified where I talk about Jean-Pierre Lafitte in the Kennedy assassination. It's going to be a very, very good show.
Awesome. Looking forward to that, Corey. As usual, great stuff, and we'll talk again soon.
Have a good one.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.